back here, and we're listening to On the Air with Glenn Bubble, and my special guest every last Thursday of every month is James Anderson, the naturalist for all of Marion County, and he always has some great stuff. And I asked him while we were off the air, because one of the things I've been interested in does I'm going to talk about gardening in the next hour. Does the frost date affect our critters? I mean, do they know? I mean, we're, what, less than a month away right now from spring.
Yeah.
Do they know that on May 4th, there will be no more frost?
Well, probably not that exact date, but, I mean, they got their instincts. I mean,
yeah.
Let them know that, you know, hey, spring is upon us, winter is, you know, going away. And I know I've mentioned on your show in the past that that's good, but I said what happens when we get into trouble is when we get these nice little worm snaps, and then bam, then it's cold and snowy.
Yeah.
And then
does that
we get
kill a lot of animals, or just make them?
Yeah, for reptiles, amphibians, it's harder on them since they're cold blooded, and since they have to depend on what's outside, that's their body temperature.
Yeah.
So. When you're fluctuating, that those temperatures are going up and down, just constantly, that's when it starts to really affect reptiles, amphibians especially, and then also our local flora, so a lot of our wildflowers, trees, things like that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, I was doing a trivia thing about critters, I think, last week, and one of the things, oh, no, I was doing it about snow, and one of the things that one of my trivia questions was, how much warmer is it inside an igloo than it is from the outdoors? And it can be as much as 100 degrees warmer inside an igloo, as opposed to, like, it might be minus 30 outside and it's 70 on the inside of an igloo. And they liken that to the polar bears up north. They burrow into it, and they stay nice and snug and warm.
That's like a beaver lodge. They're basically like that. And
sure.
And yet, you know, all they use is their teeth, their little hands, and their tail to make that. But they pack it in so well and keep it so insulated that the outside temperature can be below freezing, but it can be almost 100 degrees inside that lodge.
Yeah, nice and snug and warm. Yeah. Well, 100 degrees is too warm for me, but anyway. Hey, okay, so the frost, they don't pull down the calendar and say, oh, it's almost May 4th, we got to do something.
Yeah, no, they don't do that.
They just sense the
When things are changing, just their instincts kicking
in. What animals are we going to see? You know, we talked about skunks.
Yeah.
What animals are we going to start to see out on the tall grass trail?
So the ones that are going to be coming out quite a bit, I know squirrel activity will be starting to increase because also of their breeding season.
That has increased in my yard.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of our migratory birds will be traveling through. I know when we were on break, we were talking about how waterfowl.
Right.
Their appearance will be popping up quite a bit, not just at tall grass, but Big Island, Killdeer Plains wildlife area.
One of the things that they're talking at the Ohio Animal Diversity Conference is they were talking about the increase of trumpeter swans coming back. And also, we know that eagles are coming back because we can see them right here.
Yeah.
And there's a couple other birds that are starting to come back.
Yeah, trumpeter swans and eagles. Yeah, they're a great poster child of, you know, animals that were abundant at one time that, unfortunately, people come in and, we got a caller.
Yeah, we got a caller. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Yes, I have seen online that sandhill cranes have been seen at Killdeer Plains.
Yes.
Is that right?
And my adult son was out the day after Christmas just at his house and saw some fly over. Was very impressive.
Oh, yeah.
And I was wondering if they have ever been seen at Tallgrass or if you expect them to arrive.
Yes, I have seen them at Tallgrass Trail. I have seen them around the Big Island Wildlife Area, especially there on Epsifell Road.
Do they look like those blue herons?
Yeah, they're a little bit shorter, but they are mainly gray. And also, too, they have like a red top on top of their beak area.
Okay.
Or forehead
area. I've never
seen
one. I'm going to have to keep my eyes open.
They told me they're an Ohio State bird because they're scarlet and gray.
They're a beautiful bird.
Yes.
Only in Ohio would we think that. That's good.
Is it something that you would see year-round, or are they migratory?
A lot of them will migrate down in southern United States area, but there may be some stragglers, same with the trumpeter swans. But especially, like you mentioned, up at Killdeer Plains, there's been a big, big number of them. Huh. I have seen sandhill cranes at Tallgrass Trail about December, January time. So as long as they can find food and all, it is always a chance you can see them.
All right. Thank you.
Well, hey, thanks for the information. Yeah, that's great.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. That's what we like to hear. We have a lot of listeners that are pretty well educated about critters.
But you know what's sad? And I want to say it was Kentucky about almost a decade ago. They just added them as a game species, so you can hunt sandhill cranes.
Why would you want to?
I don't know, because they don't have
much. They're skinny.
Well, yeah, they don't have much meat on them.
Oh my!
But I guess it tastes like chicken. I don't know.
Yeah, everything tastes like chicken. I had rattlesnake meat once down in Warm Springs, Arkansas. I think it was.
Okay.
It was where Roosevelt went to get fixed, everybody would say, oh, you'll love it, you'll love it. It tastes just like chicken. It didn't taste like chicken. It was terrible. But I knew what I was eating, so that was bad. We also, at that same restaurant, we touched on, we had bear.
Oh,
We had moose.
Oh, yeah.
And some other critter like that. I didn't like any of them too much. I'm not a big gamey fan. I don't like deer. I don't like venison. Yeah, so... Anyway, I like deer jerky.
Oh, dear, yeah.
I like that a lot,
but
it's the salt that I like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I did want to ask you this, because I've had people ask me, because I know you, where can you take a critter that's been slightly injured to get them rehabbed?
Good question. So here in Central Ohio, we do have a few options you can take a injured wildlife species. So yeah, remember, if it's a pet, if it's a dog or cat, that would be through the Humane Society.
Okay.
But if it's for wildlife, there are a couple areas. The first thing I always tell people is call the wildlife officer, Chad Grody.
Okay.
So he's the guy who handles hunting, fishing laws, and also any other wildlife, injuries or what. But his number is 614-745-7210.
Why don't you give that again after we've discussed it, so people can write it.
So he's the guy that would come out. I will admit, since COVID has started, not just him, but a lot of the wildlife officers in the state of Ohio, I know they've been
tucked away.
Yeah, been kind of tucked away and kind of limited of what they've been able to do.
Sure.
So just kind of be patient with the wildlife officer. But there is a nonprofit organization out by Richwood, so not terribly far away from here. It's called Crow's Hollow Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. Again, that's in Richwood. I've never been there, but I used to live in Richwood, so I'm really curious of where it is. But people tell me about it. But their phone number is 614-535-6442. Now, if it's just a bird, you can take it to the Ohio Bird Sanctuary up there by Mansfield.
Oh,
Now, the one with the Crow's Hollow, I think they do all wildlife.
Okay.
There's also the Ohio Wildlife Center, and I don't have their number down, but they're down by Dayton, and I know they take all wildlife species.
Why don't you give us those two numbers again? The first one for
the wildlife officer.
Wildlife officer, yeah.
Yes, so his number is 614-745-7210, and for Crow's Hollow Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Richwood is 614-535-6442.
So if you find a poor little doggy that's been hit but alive and moving, you should take that to the Humane Society.
Yes, or call them. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Or the dog warden. I mean, I probably the Humane Society first. I would call them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they may have to redirect you to some other department, I would say.
All right. Well, that's good to know. And It happens occasionally.
It does. I've taken several birds up to the bird sanctuary. Since I live in Eastern Iowa County, I'm not terribly far from the bird sanctuary.
Well, now, birds would be, I would think, more fragile than, let's say, a raccoon.
You'd be surprised, really? Especially on some of them. Boy, they can be feisty.
Well, I'm sure they can be feisty. That's why I don't touch animals. As you know, I'm not a big touchy-feely friend of animals. I am a, my heart goes out to animals, yeah, but not my hands.
Now, I know for a lot of time, especially with the bird sanctuary, they say if you are going to take it to your house, to take it to their facility, if you have a dog crate or any type of cage, keep it in there, keep it in a dark, quiet environment.
Uh-huh.
I have worked with Crow's Hollow before. We had an osprey a couple years ago that right there by a tall grass trail at the lake. It got hit. And so I called the wildlife officer, then he called the Crow's Hollow, and they came out, and they took the osprey to get looked at.
Are there certain things you should and should not do when you're approaching an injured animal?
So to always be cautious. I mean, that animal is going to be terrified. Yeah. They don't know that you're there to help them.
Right.
They think that you're a predator trying to eat them, and even though you're saying, oh, it's okay, you know, they don't understand.
They don't understand English.
Yeah, as soft speaking, and you know, try to remain calm, don't scream or anything. But if you do feel really threatened, I mean, I would just definitely let it for the professionals.
Yeah. Yeah, you could call the professionals, and they might come out and take care of the animal?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Like Chad or Crow's Hollow or things.
Okay.
Like that.
Well, I would assume if you see an animal showing you his teeth, you wouldn't want to go over it.
No.
Now, I know that I've been around dogs an awful lot in my life, and I know that I've been told by dog people, if you're going to go over and pet a dog, tuck your fingers under your fist down rather than your open hand. That way, if it decides to bite you, it's not going to grab one of your fingers and rip it.
That's a good skin. That's a good point. And you probably could apply that same practice to wildlife.
Yeah. Now, I think if I saw an injured animal, and I have not, I mean, I've seen injured animals, but I haven't gone to their rescue, I think I probably would do something stupid and pick them up. Now, does that bother them? A lot of people say, don't ever pick up a little baby bird because its mama will never take care of it again.
So it depends on the wildlife. Now, okay, like for deer, yes, what you just mentioned, you do not want to
leave
do
them
that.
Alone. Yeah.
Leave them alone. And just because the deer looks like he's lost or abandoned, you know, mama put him there.
She could be 5 feet away from
that,
you.
That, that's, see her. That's right. Yeah. And especially in those first couple weeks, those are the stages when the baby, he's designed to sit still and stay quiet and don't move,
uh-huh,
until mom comes back.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's usually about 3 or 4 weeks or a little older than that. It's when, okay, I need to run.
Yeah.
But then when people see, oh, this little deer is all by itself.
Let's go pet him on his
head.
Yeah.
And the problem is you're rubbing your scent, yep, onto that, and then mom's smelling your smell on that, it's fawn or it's baby, and I'm saying, well, I may not want to go near it.
Yeah, that would
now
be
for
bad.
Birds, like we mentioned before, they don't have a sense of smell.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's just an old folklore.
That's why you see when all those birds, the water birds, were covered with oil when there was the Exxon got sunk or whatever happened, they actually picked them up and,
yeah,
washed them off with Dawn's dishwashing soap.
Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Well, I will try to avoid going over to a deer if it looks like it's lost, and I won't pick it up. Deer kind of scare me, though. I told you about the time I went chased some deer down, went up over a hill, and there was a buck looking at me like, I'm going to take you on.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. You're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble and my special guest, James Anderson, our Marion naturalist.
I've got my milk and my bowl and my saucer.
Sounds like you're getting ready for breakfast. What are you having?
Well, I'm having a bowl of golden grams with a side of toast with golden butter and a nice golden glass of apple juice.
I should have known.
Ah.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
G GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
We're back. I'm sorry. I fell asleep at the switch there. Sorry. I was going to tell you, I watch a show called Death in Paradise.
Okay.
And the detective is, well, it's down in the Caribbean, and the detective is given a shack to live in, and he's made it really nice, and it's really kind of fun. But one of his buddies is a little lizard.
Oh.
Yeah, and my wife and I think it must be an animated lizard because it does all sorts of really cute things.
Oh, probably most likely.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, we're back to some other ideas. Ohio, why do we not, why are we so worried about animals that are going extinct? Or I mean, who cares if some frog, we never see it again?
You know, that is a very good question. Okay. So what I always tell kids, I said, imagine nature or an ecosystem. Imagine it as your community. Imagine that all these plants and all these animals are like the people in your community. There's a lot of different types of people with different jobs. And I usually give examples, so like your teachers and your mailman and your police officer and, you know, so on and so on. And I said, you know, that in nature, that's called a niche. An ecological niche is basically their purpose or how they contribute into the ecosystem. Rather they're a prey, rather they're a predator. You know, I could go on about all the different type of niches there are.
Yeah.
Well, I said what happens is rather you either take out that, you know, that person or that animal out of that equation, you just take one out. Well, do the other members suffer? It can be yes or no. Okay, what if I take another? What if I take another? And then eventually the whole system collapse. So every animal has a purpose, and if we don't protect them, that goal or that ecological niche that they hold, it can, you know, and in the long run, it can harm humans.
Even mosquitoes?
Mosquito. I knew you were going to ask that. And, you know, I get so many people telling me about that. But, you know, yes, mosquitoes are nuisance. And, yes, they can be dangerous because they can transfer diseases.
Lyme disease and stuff.
And, yeah. But the big thing about mosquitoes is they are an ultimate food source for wildlife. During the larvae stage, when they're in the water, fish.
Bats love them.
Yeah, when they're adults, bats. A lot of birds will eat them. But then when they're in the larvae form, you got fish, you got turtles, you got a lot of other types of wildlife that are eating the small mosquito larvae. So that's their basically ecological niche. Now, also, too, some male mosquitoes, not all, but some species are actually pollinators.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they pollinate flowers. Oh. Versus the female is the bloodsucker.
Ah, the female is.
Yes.
Is she bigger than the male?
Yes.
I thought I remembered that.
Yeah, she's bigger because obviously she's got to have a lot more room to carry her babies. And but she's going to carry hundreds of babies.
You're not telling me if a mosquito lands on my arm and starts to sting me, I can't swat it.
I mean, I'm going to swat it too. Yeah. So I figure there are a lot more
out there. There are plenty of them out there. Yeah. If you've ever been in northern Michigan at certain times of the year when the mosquitoes come out, yeah, you'll be swatting.
Oh, yes.
Now, you know, we seem to get hyper carried away with some of these animals. Do you think we ever carry it too far?
We carry it too far.
I'm asking a naturalist if we shouldn't kill some animals.
You know, I don't know. Now, are you talking about like in a more protection standpoint, or?
Yeah, I was thinking like, what was I thinking of? There are certain animals that people will call me a libber, and because I want to protect a certain animal.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I may be barking up a tree that I don't know how to get out of.
Okay.
So I'm gonna leave that alone.
Okay.
Never mind. I'm just going
to kind of go on about the whole protection thing. You know, I love that, you know, TV and social media were all about protect the pandas and protect the rhinos and the elephants. Don't get me wrong. I think that's great, and that's wonderful. I mean, we need to do that because, unfortunately, a lot of the people who are indigenous to those areas where those wildlife are, a lot of them sometimes will care and sometimes won't. But I tell people we have endangered species in our own backyard. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people don't realize, I've done this presentation several times. I want to say we have 13, 14 endangered species in Marion County.
Is that right?
Yes. Now, most of those are mussels or like clams. And then we have a few bird species. The Eastern Masago or the pygmy rattlesnake is another great example. So, I mean, especially if you're on the west side of the county, like Big Island Wildlife Area, you really could see some of these endangered species.
Now, one of the problems with this is, and I guess this is where I was going with what I was trying to say, we have gotten to the point where we've andromorphized, I mispronounced that word, but we see cartoons of really cute polar bears, and oh, aren't they cute, and we turn them into human beings, but you don't really want to go and meet with a real polar bear, right?
No, because they're actually polar bears.
They'll eat you.
Yep, they're one of the few active predators with people.
Is that right?
Yeah.
They look for people?
Yep. Because we can remember, and up in the Arctic tundra, there's not a lot of food out there.
Yeah, anything that's got meat on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, that answered my question. But there are a lot of really cute cartoon critters that you probably should just leave alone.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's like Disney. Don't get me wrong. I love Disney and all their films and all. But the one thing that you always love pushing is wolves. They always make the wolves the bad guys,
yeah,
the bad animals. And the unfortunate thing when Disney does that is people are like, well, I hate wolves. Let's kill every wolf
and
we see.
And they've done it.
And they've done it. And unfortunately, you know, we used to have wolves in Ohio, I mean, a long time ago. And so people, you know, kicked them out. And, you know, if we're teaching that to our kids to hate and be afraid of wolves, and, you know, like we mentioned earlier with the whole ecological niche that we don't really, you know, not really taught, you know, a lot of these animals can become extinct. And like you mentioned, I mean, once they're gone, they're gone. We don't get a second chance.
Well, Yellowstone Park, they've reintroduced the wolves in Yellowstone Park.
Yep.
And the farmers hate it, and I understand because they kill their wildlife or their livestock.
They can be a threat, for livestock.
And I guess I kind of understand that. If you get a pack of wolves that's taken down one of your calves every night, you're going to get... That's going to cost you a lot of money.
And it does. And it's hard to balance that equation between man and nature.
Yeah, and at some point what we tend to do is then open up a gun season for those animals.
I want to say Wyoming, one of those western states, they did open a wolf season. Now, I know the other part where Yellowstone is in, I forget which state, you are not allowed.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm trying to remember where it is. I think it's in two states.
Yeah.
Wyoming and Colorado? No, it's not Colorado.
Yeah, I can't remember the other state, though.
Yeah, it might be Colorado. I don't know. All right. So, but as far as the killing of critters that are going extinct, what do you do if you happen to be out? Well, you've got to protect yourself.
Oh, yeah. You're always...
The polar bear might be going extinct somewhere. You better protect yourself and your family, right?
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with that. I mean, if it's going to kill you or your family or what, I mean, you do have to defend yourself.
Have you ever used bear spray or had it?
I've never used bear spray, but I have had to use a technique to scare a bear away in Canada.
Yeah. So. Okay. What was the technique?
Oh, so, I can't remember. I know I've told Charlie this before. So, when we were up in Halliburton, Canada, which is about, I think, about 8 hours north of Ontario, We had to watch this movie when I was at Hocking College. It was called Woe Bear, and it told us what to do if you ever encounter an American black bear. And so what you do is if a bear comes upon you, you just first off remain calm and you hold out your hands and say, "Woe bear, woe bear," and you slowly back up. Always keep your eyes on the bear because bears are unpredictable.
Yeah.
Do this for about 5 or 10 minutes or so. Now, if he...
I'm not hanging around for 5 or 10 minutes.
As you're backing up. Now, okay. If the bear is... And sometimes they are curious. If they're not going to leave you alone, this is when you get more aggressive. Get a stick, beat on the ground, you know, throw a rock, not directly at it, but by it, and then yell, you know, make yourself look bigger. Do that for a little bit. If that doesn't work, that's when, you know, you have to really... declare your dominance, and if they attack you, punch, scream, kick, whatever you do. And if they do get you on the ground, flip over when your stomach's on the ground, because that's where bears typically like to start on their prey, is the stomach region.
Mm-hmm.
And they will try to keep flipping and flipping you over, and as long as you keep finding them and keeping your vital organs, you know, protected, You
got a chance.
Yeah, your chance of survival increases.
All right, well, you scared the daylights out of me.
But no, I did not get attacked, but I had to do those beginning stages, which, you know, like, woe bear, woe bear.
Jim Gaffigan does a fantastic piece. He's a stand-up comedian. Does a fantastic piece on when he got to greet a bear with his family.
Oh, okay.
And the part that is one of the funniest parts is where he says, and our naturalist told us that we should start backing up. And he said, and I think he said, you say whoa to the bear.
Yeah, yeah.
And he kind of said, we were backing up into the woods so he could take a better shot at us. So anyway, I'm not. That's why I don't go into the woods too deep. I go to state parks. That's where I go.
Well, yeah,
there are probably bears there.
The Hocking Hills, yeah.
Yeah.
Up in the Cuyahoga National Park up there in northeastern Ohio, there have been some reports.
But they're usually black bears, and black bears tend to be... not nearly as aggressive.
No, no.
You wouldn't want to go to the Arctic and live with a polar bear.
Or in grizzly bears, too. I mean, yes. they're definitely more aggressive as well.
Yeah, and you can meet grizzly bears in the United States. You go out to Yellowstone, you'll see them. Yeah, and like an idiot, I got out of a car and kind of waved at one. But anyway, that was when I was young and stupid. I don't do that anymore. Roll up the windows and wave at them that way.
There you go. Was it the Charmin bear?
Yeah, and he wiggled his tail at me. All right. Does snow, we've had a ton of snow this year.
Yeah.
Are there certain critters that like snow more than other critters in our area?
I mean, some of your mammals are definitely enjoying it. Now, the only thing is food availability is going to be a little bit more difficult since the snow is deeper.
Yeah.
But I was telling you on break, in Texas, with the snow cold snap, you know, not just the people were prepared, but the local flora and fauna, they have really suffered. I don't know if you have seen...
They couldn't get their electric turned on?
They're just not adapted to have those cold temperature, and especially a long cold period. Now, especially the sea turtles, they were washing up on the shore by the hundreds.
And people were... picking them up and taking them in their houses to warm them up.
There was a conference center, I want to say Houston, and they had over 1,000.
Oh, my.
But then with the warm snap, they have released them back.
Good, good. Well, they need to, because it'll make a mess out of your pool.
I think we're definitely going to, in the next few months, we'll probably see the, not just in the human perspective, but the wildlife perspective about what the snowstorm in Texas.
Yeah, do you think there will be a diminishing number of critters?
Yeah, I could definitely, like you and I were talking earlier, especially with the reptiles, amphibians, I think their population is probably going to get hit pretty hard.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Scott, do you know what my favorite meal is?
No, Charlie, what is it?
A BLF.
What's a BLF?
Bacon, lettuce, and fruitcake sandwich. Good.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back, and we were talking about invasive plants off the air, and it brought up to my thinking. Oops, my computer just went off. Are there plants that we should not get from the local nursery?
Yes.
We're all going to go out and start our gardening here in the next 2 or 3 months.
Yes.
What should we avoid? Are there certain ones that are worse than others?
Yes, yes. So, unfortunately, you know, when we're putting in our flower gardens,
yeah.
I want to say, a lot of us want to go get the exotics, or the domesticated species, I like to call them.
Okay.
And some of them are okay. I mean, what I mean by that is they're not going to be like crazy and take over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they look pretty to us, and some wildlife insect species may take advantage, but overall, most other of the local wildlife are like, I really don't know what that is. I may want to stay away from it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, some of them get kind of crazy, like bush honeysuckle, autumn olive, multiflora rose.
Autumn olive?
Yeah, autumn olive.
That's a bush, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bush, big shrub.
Yeah, and it smells great.
Oh, it does. Oh. It smells like, I think it smells like Jolly Ranchers. the problem with it is it can grow out of control, and it can be considered invasive. Now, 3 years ago, Ohio passed a law that there was a list of 37 species of plants in nurseries that could not be sold in Ohio, and autumn olive and honeysuckle was on the list. I forget, like, there's again 30 some other plants, but unfortunately the damage has already been done, because, you know, your landscaping industries, your nurseries, you know, people are buying, they're planting, well, they produce these berries and birds, oh, that's a nice little berry, I'm going to eat it, and I'm fly. What did he just do? He pooped, and what was in his poop?
There's another...
the seed, yeah. And then that's how they spread.
Is there a place that we can get lists of things that are local plants and non-local plants?
So Natives of Harmony, which is a local nursery outside of Marengo.
What's that called again?
Natives in Harmony.
Okay.
Gail Martin, a lot of you who are listening might have remembered her. She was the director for the Marion Historical Society. She retired a few years ago, and she has put a full focus onto her business, but she only focuses on selling native plants.
Okay.
That people can buy and then plant them in their yards. And it's great because for many reasons. Yes, obviously the local wildlife are going to thrive and they're going to be happy about that. But, you know, when we buy these domestic or these exotic plants, we have to put a lot of time. We have to put a lot of effort, you know, mulch and watering and, you know, all this time and energy. Well, the native plants are already adapted to this environment, so you don't have to put as much maintenance in these native plants than you would a domestic exotic plant. So that's another great plus for you.
Yeah. Now, I think people like to buy the exotic plants because they don't see them, and so therefore it's visually something exciting.
Yeah, they look pretty. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have a perennial garden in my front yard, and I've been trying very hard not to put anything in it that isn't grown in Ohio. But I was told by a friend that one of the plants that I have in there, yes, is grown in Ohio, but the species of that plant that I have is not. So, not that it's going to do anything really bad, but it's not really a local plant. So you really have to have the knowledge. Now, where is Natives in Harmony? Where is it located?
It's in Morrow County. It's outside of Marengo.
Okay.
So so they're in kind of southern Delaware County, or Morrow County, sorry. But I worked there last summer. It's a really great place. She'll definitely help you out. She'll give you definitely recommendations if you tell her what your yard looks like. Like, is it shaded? Is it open?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And she has a variety from forest plants to more open land plants and wetland plants. So if you have a like a pond or anywhere really wet area on your property, she's definitely got some species for you to plant there.
Do you recommend putting a pond in your backyard? I mean, is it something is good or bad?
It can go both ways.
Well, I mean, you're inviting critters to come eat the fish.
Yes, and not just eat fish, but to your water too.
Yeah.
Well, that's like bird feeding. I tell people, you know, when you feed your birds, you know, with your bird feeders, you know, that's great and everything. You know, we are attracting birds, but guess who else you're going to attract?
Squirrels.
Squirrels, raccoons, opossums, skunks.
Yeah.
A lot of other we call nuisance species. So
yeah.
One of my presentations, I say you attract wildlife, but you're also going to attract other wildlife.
Ah, good. Well, we have a caller. Let's see what this person has to say. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Well, that's your morning test. Hey,
I have to give
great kudos to Gail Martin. Of course, Gail and I worked together for a number of years when she was director of the Marion County Historical Society's Museum, and she's done a lot of wonderful things with native plants.
She has.
And, of course, for years, when we had the Tullaromine Prairie and also the one over by the railroad track, Gail was, you know, very, very instrumental in keeping invasive plants out of those two things. Her and Kensel Clutter, just they're just people that you can't replace. Period.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But if you want to go, I think if you go on the Gail's website, she'll give you directions because it's really off the beaten path.
Oh yes, yes it is.
It's kind of hard to describe how to get there, but I think she has directions on her website for you to get there, but it's just a wonderful place. In fact, I think she's planning another 4th of July thing out there this year, over the 4th and 5th of July, kind of like a encampment. I know a lot of us are going to go out and dress in period costumes.
Cool,
that
awesome.
Thing.
Yeah.
And that'll give you an opportunity to see the nursery as well. So,
okay. She has a whole nursery then, huh?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow, they've got a nice little farm there, and just a very nice, relaxing place to go.
That's going
to
be on the top of my list.
Yeah,
she's just a wonderful person. I can't give her enough praise. And really, the Marion County Historical Society is where it is today because of her.
Huh, fantastic. Yeah. And her name is Gail Martin, huh?
Gail Martin, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's Natives in Harmony. Yeah.
All right.
It's a wonderful place.
I'm heading that way as soon as the weather breaks.
Hey, while I've got you still on the air, James, have you been over to Malabar much?
Not lately, no.
Okay. Next time I'm in the studio, I'll leave my card there that has my cell phone number on it. Sometime when you want to come over, my buddy Tom and I, who was a naturalist there for a number of years until he retired, we'll give you the behind-the-scenes tour of the property.
Oh, awesome. Lucky dog.
Yeah, we'll go to some places where, you know, most people don't know anything about.
Oh, really? Awesome.
That'll be cool, yeah.
Being a naturalist yourself, I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I'll
hey,
take you up
you guys,
on that.
Hey, you guys have a great day.
Thanks,
you
Fred.
Too.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that would be fun.
I would be. Yeah, I've only been there about twice.
I've never been there.
It's a
I've
beautiful
got to go
facility.
There too. But I am going to Natives in Harmony first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that
you'll
sounds
like, it.
Like a place I need to go. Maybe she can help me figure out what other perennials I need to put out.
Oh, yeah.
I have it in a big circle because it was a place, I think, that they chopped down a tree and kind of ground it up and I think probably poisoned it.
Oh, probably.
And nothing would grow there. So I covered it with, I brought in other dirt and stuff like that. And then, well, I did a lot of things. And now it's really turned out to be a nice perennial garden. But perennials, I know they're supposed to live year to year, but you lose some during a winter this.
Yeah, you do.
So,
well, you know, probably a big contributing factor to that is squirrels. Squirrels are probably digging it up or holes.
Yes, I always have squirrel holes where they're trying to either find a nut or leave a nut.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, I do have those. Excuse me. Anyway, Natives in Harmony. Okay, that's where I'm going first time I get a break. Yeah, my wife, she might like that.
Yeah, it's really, and like Fred said, it's out there in Morrow County in part where it's not a paved road, so.
Oh, okay, so I've got to take my four-wheel drive.
Well, you don't have to take your four-wheel, but.
I don't have a four-wheel drive, but go ahead.
But yeah, it's in Harmony Township there in Morrow County.
Okay, I have rarely gone into Morrow County.
You have?
Yeah, I go over there occasionally. Back when I was with the credit union, I'd go over there for a golf outing or two. That's about the only reason why I went
there. At the golf course?
Yeah.
Now it's a KOA.
Oh, is it?
Yep, just this last year they converted it to a KOA.
Oh, well, there you can't make any money if you own a golf course. That's for sure.
It's right across from the state park.
Yeah. Oh, is it really? Yeah, oh, yeah. Of course it is. Park. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to talk about new stuff here at our next get together because we will be in spring the next.
That's
time
right. We will, and I'm hoping bring a slimy friend, a live slimy friend.
Oh, maybe somebody else will have to host this show.
Yeah, maybe a frog or a toad. Maybe. I mean,
you can leave him in his little critter box, can't you?
I could.
You know, it's kind of crazy that I'm afraid of toads and frogs.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, right? I am. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's called ranophobia.
Really?
Yep.
And in my head, I say to myself, there's nothing to be afraid of. Yeah. They're not going to bite you.
No.
They're not going to slime you. They're not going to do anything. But it must be something from my childhood or something.
Were you chased around?
I don't think so. I did one time kill one on the end of a rake, which was not nice. But I killed a robin too, and I still love robins. But I don't know.
You know why we're talking about frogs?
Yeah.
And as it's warming up, frog calling will be
frog calling.
Yes, like when they're breeding season.
Oh yeah.
So right now the wood frog, they're probably either started or almost finished, depending on where you are in Ohio.
I remember
they sound like a duck. And then the ones that you'll hear a lot here in the next probably couple of weeks are the spring peepers. They're the ones that go beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, there are some that I've been told I'm an idiot because I thought they were, like grasshoppers. Or they make that kind of, I can't make the sound. they sound like locust or something
like
that.
Well, there are caiadids, which look like locusts.
Yeah.
But those are more summer, not really spring.
But they're not frogs.
No, they're not frogs. They're insects.
But there are some frogs that sound like that.
There are. There's a cricket frog that sounds like
the word I was looking for, cricket.
That, like, if you're playing with marbles, you know how that drops and it's a
yeah?
Yep. We have a lot of them at Tallgrass Trail.
Okay.
And the leopard frogs.
Leopard frogs.
Yep, because they have spots like a leopard.
Now, there are so many critters out there that you talk about that I have never seen in my life of 74 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you have to come out.
No, I think the reason why I haven't seen them is I don't go looking for them.
So that's me. I try looking for them.
Well, I like walking on the Tallgrass Trail and looking, but I really don't want to find a snake on my trail.
That was going to be my next thing.
They should be starting to come out when it gets warm, right?
Probably about the end of March, typically.
Oh, okay.
Now, it depends. If we get a warm snap and we're going to stay warm for a while, that I have seen some in March. But most of the time, I'm like between late March to mid-April is when a lot of them come out.
Are most of them like garter snakes? Or
yeah.
Do you get a lot of black snakes, too?
More towards the 3-mile marker of the trail by Epsifil, but mainly you'll come across garter snakes and the Deke's brown snake.
Okay, and they're usually greenish or brownish?
Brown, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, we've only got about 50 more seconds, and I'm looking forward to having you back on the last Thursday
of
next month, and it will be spring.
That's right. I'm excited. My favorite season.
It is my favorite season
awesome.
As well. Yeah. And we will talk about, I'm sure there'll be a ton of critters out by
now. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And flowers, wildflowers.
We will start to get those. Yeah. I have a crocus in my yard that come up probably in early March sometimes. Depends on the weather.
Yeah.
But sometimes they don't make it. I've been disappointed lately with my crocus. Well, we're going to head out of here. You've been listening to Glenn Coble on the air with James Anderson, the naturalist from Marion County. And thanks for joining us. We had a great day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, your place for politics. The only local Marion news coverage from the Republican National Convention. With conservative icon Phyllis Schlafly.
This is Scott Spears at the 2016 Republican National Convention
in Cleveland, Ohio at the Quicken Loans Arena, and we are joined by a conservative icon, Mrs. Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis, how many conventions have you been to?
Well, I came to my first one in 1952, so you can count them up.
Do you think that it's good that Bob Dole is the only Republican past candidate for president who's shown at this event? Is that respectable on his behalf?
Well, that's the attempt of the anti-Trump people to downgrade him in some way. And I think they're going to be shown up as not loyal and sour grapes, and they're not going to benefit by that behavior.
Phyllis, what is your favorite part of the convention? What do you like to do the best while you're here?
Well, my specialty has been the platform committee, and I've worked very hard on that, as you can see in my new book called How We Made the Republican Party Pro-Life. And I follow that very closely. And while I was not on the platform committee this time, my people were, and they were well trained. And we have, I think, the best platform ever.
What do you think makes it the best platform ever?
Because it's right on the major issues. It's right on national sovereignty. It's right on jobs for Americans. It's right on being against bad trade bills, and being for jobs for Americans. And it's right on immigration, which I think is a major issue.
And CNN commentator Van Jones. Speaking to that speech tomorrow night by Mr. Trump, will he be able to stick to script, or will he want to talk about the speech Monday? Will he want to go off? Will he want to criticize the media? And if he does it even matter here?
Listen, Donald Trump is a phenomenon. Donald Trump is not... have to obey the normal rules of, forget political life, civil life, civic life. Ordinarily, someone who behaves the way that he does wouldn't be invited to your dinner party. They wouldn't be allowed to date your daughter. If they were your child, you put them in time out, or maybe get them a therapist. But this man, for whatever reason, has been allowed by the Republican voters and by the media to behave in a way that is appalling. When it's not shocking and when it's not disgusting. And so he will do whatever he does. He may stick to that teleprompter and deliver a very, very stiff, bad speech, but I suspect he will want to break away from that teleprompter. He might say anything.
WWGH Radio, your place for politics. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Catch us on any mobile device by downloading the free TuneIn app and searching WWGH. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. This is Scott Spears, high above Marion in the WWGH News Chopper. If you see news in Marion, please email us at scott@wwgh1071.com. And keep an eye out for the WWGH News Chopper flying high overhead. Programming on WWGH Radio is proudly supported by Mimi's Party Zone and Balloons. Address 117 North Greenwood Street, Suite 5. Telephone number 740-262-8810. Facebook page, Mimi's Party Zone and Balloons.
Hello, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you're listening to WWGH 107.1 FM and streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com and speedy delivery.
Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740-272-0062. Website WilliamsGrassCutters.com. Facebook page at Williams Grass Cutters. Email w.grasscutters@gmail.com.
This is Earl Fitzamerican. You're listening to WWGH 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue, phone number 740-387-9050. It's now time for the obituary report on WWGH Radio.
Carolyn June Rapp, maiden name Williams, age 82 of Marion, passed away on February 20th at her home. She is survived by her husband, children, grandchildren, siblings, nephews, and nieces. Her family will greet friends from 10 until 11 in the morning on Friday the 26th at the Snyder Funeral Home, 347 West Center Street. Burial will be observed privately by her family in Marion Cemetery, with Reverend Rob Howard officiating. A public memorial service at the First Presbyterian Church will be announced at a later date. You may leave an online condolence at SnyderFuneralHomes.com. For Carolyn June Rapp of Marion. Martha P. Haynes, age 94, passed away on Monday, February 22nd, at her home in Primrose Community. She is survived by her children, grandchildren, great-grandson, and great-granddaughter on the way. Her family will greet friends from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, February 26th, at the Snyder Funeral Home, 360 East Center Street. Services honoring her life will be held on Saturday, February 27th, at 11 a.m. at the Kirkpatrick Church of Christ, 5154 Columbus Sandusky Road North, with her grandson, Pastor Joshua Haynes, and Pastor Don Kelly officiating. Burial will follow in Caledonia Cemetery. You may leave an online condolence at SnyderFuneralHomes.com. For Martha P. Haynes of Marion.
Reverend Kenneth Eugene Dercha, age 85 of Marion, passed away at Heartland of Marion on Saturday, February 20th. He is survived by his wife, sister, and nephew. Visitation will be held at Fair Park Community Baptist Church, 940 Bermuda Drive, on Wednesday, February 24th from 4 to 7 p.m. A funeral will be celebrated at the church on Thursday, the 25th, at 11 a.m. Burial will follow at Chapel Heights Memory Gardens. You may leave an online condolence at SnyderFuneralHomes.com. For Reverend Kenneth Eugene Dercha of Marion. Earl D. Close, Jr., age 59, of Marion, passed away at Marion General Hospital on Sunday, February 21st. He is survived by his wife, daughters, stepdaughters, grandchildren, siblings, niece, and nephews. A memorial gathering will be held in Earl's honor at a later date. You may leave an online condolence at BoydBourneFuneralHome.com. For Earl D. Close of Marion.
Marla K. Hayford, age 77, passed away on Sunday, February 21st at Marion General Hospital. She is survived by her daughters, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. Private services will be held. Burial will take place at the Marion Cemetery. You may leave an online condolence at BoydBourneFuneralHome.com. For Marla K. Hayford. Ruby L. Jones, age 71, of Marion, passed away on Saturday,